Союз нерушимый, республик свободных сплотила навеки Великая Русь. Да здравствует созданный волей народов единый могучий Советский Союз. Славься, Отечество наше свободное, дружбы народов надежный оплот. Знамя советское, знамя народное, пусть от победы к победе ведет. Сквозь грозы сияло нам солнце свободы, и Ленин великий нам путь озарил. Нас вырастил Сталин на верность народу, на труд и на подвиги нас вдохновил.
Good evening and welcome to Boys Town with Aaron. Today I have a very special guest, and may Allah forgive me, it's an unchaperoned woman. Welcome to the show, Rothbardian.
Hello.
A fellow masshole.
Yes, a fellow masshole. It turns out we're actually not that far from each other.
Yeah, yep. I probably flip you off on my way back from work or vice versa. Actually, I drive like an old lady, so you probably flip me off.
No, I drive like an old lady, too.
Oh. So we're both in the fast lane doing like 50.
Yes, yes. Nice. And everybody else is mad at us. Yes.
Yeah, so prior to this episode, when I was doing my little contest for my saying a certain word in my DMs, she won. I think she was the...
I was lucky number 13.
13.
No, I was lucky number 13.
So she was lucky number 13, and I gave her a reading assignment. That reading assignment was The Democratic Tasks of the Revolutionary Proletariat by a famous libertarian, V.I. Lenin.
Yeah. So we're going back to my roots. I wanted to say I felt really, like, unclean reading it, right?
being a Russian descent.
Yeah, like being a Russian immigrant, right? And like I had, you know, recorded like my quote unquote cover of the Soviet anthem, and I sent it to you, and after that I just felt so dirty. Right? Because like my parents had uplifted their whole life, moved to America, brought me here, right?
Yep.
And I'm gonna go talk on the internet. Oh, he had some good ideas.
They say like the second generation immigrant usually ends up like going back to the system that their parents or grandparents fled from.
Yeah, and like I'm not even sure how I should label myself, right? Because I moved here when I was 10, so you sort of have your foot in both cultures, right?
Oh yeah.
But like you do grow up really with this sort of understanding that communism bad, because you had to grow up in the after effects of communism, and you got to sort of see the like dumpster fire it results in, right? but when I read your assignment, I felt much more excited reading that than I have like any of the messaging from the LP. And
weird, right?
Right, because like there was this line in there when you know they were talking about like the bougie when they were talking about like the sort of bougie or I guess the equivalent of the nowadays bougie either somebody from the lower left or like for us somebody that would be very into politics, when they were talking about like this means that the dire enemy of the people is to convene an assembly and ensure that the elections will be free and universal, right? So when they were talking about the, you know, wish that some people have, oh, to make things more fair, make it democratic, but ask the Tsar to make it democratic, right?
Yeah, to democratize as much as possible.
And like, I really appreciated the point that they were, you know, trying to make about, that he was trying to make, unless you overthrow the system, you can't get the system to be kinder to you.
Yeah. Absolutely. That you can reach a certain point where, you know, you might meet some of your goals and then you're going to hit a brick wall. And that's kind of where communism and social democracy clashed. Social democracy was fine. And even nowadays, you know, the more leftist elements in our political system right now, our nice, respectable political system, like your AOCs, your Ilhan Omars, they are very limited in the amount of progress they can make. Assuming that they have access to the bureaucratic end of this government and they can push through whatever they want, you still can only make so much progress before you hit a brick wall. We can have universal health care, but you're not going to get away. You're not going to get rid of the private companies that are going to end up writing the bills for it. You can have, you can defund the police, but you're not going to get rid of the violence and the injustice that, fills that vacuum. So I think what I got from this is taking yourself away from like things that libertarians talk about all the time, like agorism and self-sufficiency and, finding a plot of land with some water on it and making a garden and, raising homeschooling and all that, cryptocurrency, 3D printing guns. We can talk at length about that. We could find that on our timeline just scrolling for 1 second.
Agorism. Hey, Aaron, do you know that agorism is a thing?
Yeah, I...
Do you know that you can grow cucumbers and buy land and 3D print guns? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Somebody should tell me that once more. Right?
Yeah, it's kind of like we're both pointing fingers at each other. I've had agorists say like, well, if the political system was the way in which we achieve liberty, then we would have already done it already. And then you can point it at them and say, well, if agorism was the way in which we achieve liberty, it would have already happened. So it's just a circle jerk, and I love agorism to death. Like I own crypto. I'll keep it to myself about my 3D printing ventures.
Yeah.
As far as like black market activity and electronic anonymity goes, like I'm in. I'm all in.
Yeah. But same. Like I honestly think that's the widest spill that you can have.
Absolutely.
And so I'm not saying that they're wrong, but I just like the people sitting at their computers and arguing, is it the Mises Caucus or is it agorism, right? And
it's I don't think it's an either like, or. It's a combination thereof. Going to a Mises Caucus event doesn't prevent you from selling drugs while you're there.
Yeah, no, that is very well said.
Like, if anything, agorists should be looking at what the LPMC is trying to do as a market opportunity. You're getting a bunch of people that are friendly to agorism together. And though they might not be going the path that you'd like them to go, they're still making progress on all fronts.
Yeah. And I think that really any way that you can organize and meet like-minded people is good, right? And even if you see, political participation as hopeless in terms of like spreading the message of liberty or however you want to say it, you can just meet like-minded people and hang out. So I'm thankful for my local LPMC because I found people to play D&D with in real life. Right. So I'm not a member of the LP, but I just show up to the local LPMC meetings and I bake muffins and I just hang out.
I would like to get involved in an unofficial capacity because I think I would meet some cool people in my area. Some hot singles in my area.
Yeah, so I'll see girls in my area. Or, D&D friends.
Yeah, yep.
But yes.
I'm more of a Warhammer guy, but I don't know if anybody's that autistic, but
yeah.
It's worth finding out. Speaking of struggling for
autistic.
And being autistic. So Lenin has a passage from this. It speaks to something that we experience today. And it's this quote. For this reason, the bourgeois struggle for liberty is notoriously timorous, inconsistent, and half-hearted. Like just that sentence right there. Like regardless of context. Do you think that can be applied to today?
Do you see what I wrote down? You're a listener of the show. You're not going to see. I just had pointed out to Aaron that I had written this down. And then under that quote, I have the task of the proletariat is to prod the bourgeoisie on.
Yes, prod them along. And can you think of anything today that can be applied, that quote can apply for, that maybe the intelligentsia of our quote-unquote liberty movement maybe just isn't going, maybe is driving the speed limit and isn't... needs to put the fucking pedal to the metal.
So I guess at multiple levels, like, I mean, like, you have your people that are like hopelessly blue pilled, right? But then, like, in terms of the people in our sphere that we admire, I want to preface this by saying that it is really easy to write, to sit at my desk and comment on what other people should be doing, right, or what other people don't do enough of. But it's kind of similar to what he wrote in here, is that a lot of people have too much to lose. I think it becomes really easy to be the cool kid in a group of uncool kids. And I think that if you were going at this, right, full-heartedly, you would be advocating something that's a little bit more extreme. Or I'm not saying you would be advocating collapse, but I think that if you were going at this full-heartedly, not half-heartedly, you wouldn't be giving people as much hope. So, like, look, I will gladly vote for Dave Smith for president when he runs. I think that all of the LPMC guys are cool. I think their podcasts are entertaining. I view this, like, all of this, like, liberty community participation as hanging out and having fun talking while everything's going downhill.
Yeah, and it's important to note that, like, you know, a lot of people have a lot to say about what needs to be done, but
yeah,
it's because it's born out of frustration. Like, I am the way I am because I'm tired, I'm frustrated, and I'm angry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When I go on, like, a Libertarian Party Facebook page, when I see blue-pilled libertarians saying, oh, we need to run Justin Amash because he can get us to 5%, there needs to be some pushback against that. And that's within the context of libertarianism. And then in the wider context, you get even more black-pilled when you see, you know, just the dissent in culture and institutions being taken over by people that want you dead. It is really easy to say, well, you should do this, this, and this, but nobody has
and
yet.
And we'll have too much to lose.
The libertarian podcasting community is comically large. It is it is a saturated market. And I don't know many people who have been, like, called out. I don't know many people that have been, like, offered a position in their local party, or, you know, have been given the opportunity to put their money where their mouth is and get something going in an official or semi-official capacity, because they don't want us to do. They look at us like we're fucking, like, we're boogeymen. We're talking about, like, collapse and, you know, secession and balkanization as the end goal. And that's nowhere near where they're at. But we need to have that as an end goal, because even if we meet somewhere in between, okay, let's get 5% of the vote and call that success, or let's have a total balkanization of the United States and that's our success. If we meet somewhere in between there, then I think we'll all be happy.
I really don't want to hate on the LPMC, partially because, like, that's the one redeeming category.
it's the one redeeming aspect of the LP,
right? Like it's only ray of hope, but I do view it as, like, it's just another click, and I love the Austrian economist as much as your next autist, right? And I think it's cool that there is a sort of, like, edgy nerd kind of a culture, but I would be much more quote-unquote in if somebody just said out loud, our hope is to overthrow, or our hope is to get people riled up, our hope is to get people so angry or so hopeless that they'll actually do something drastic, like, as opposed to tell them about liberty and tell them about the non-aggression principle. And I don't think we can be saved if more people learn about
that. If you read communist theory, the end goal is whatever their idealized version of liberty is. Just like in you know, right libertarian theory, the end goal is an idealized version of liberty. The difference between them is that people like Lenin, they didn't make liberty their central marketing. They made overthrowing the enemy, or revolution against the enemy class, against the system that's been taken over by them, as the marketing. And that's much more appealing to somebody that's, say, living in a 5-bedroom apartment with a bunch of roommates and working 50 hours a week, or especially nowadays, that's been out of work, collecting unemployment, you know, gaining 20 pounds from eating shit food. It's just that reactionary spirit where you're fighting against something rather than for something.
Yeah.
seems to be more appealing, seems to be more in demand nowadays than saying, oh, we're fighting for liberty. No, don't tell me what you're fighting for. Tell me what you're fighting against.
I think that's really well said. I wish I could just take all of my rambling back and just say this back to you.
No, that was me rambling.
No, I think that's really well said. And I also feel like, I think partially why, to be honest with you, I got so blackpilled on the LP was because over this past year, right? If you didn't say fuck the system now, then when else could you say it? What more could it take to try to capitalize on this?
It's going to take it affecting their children, which luckily is the unabashed goal of, progressivism, is eventually to indoctrinate your kids. And it's going to take that in the wider world of political power. That's really the only chance we have of convincing conservatives to become reactionaries.
Yeah. So, but then you still see people that are sort of on the sort of reasonable right.
The Ben
Shapiro's
and fucking.
Yeah,
Charlie
that
Kirk's.
We should open the public schools. We should open the public schools.
God.
Fuck yeah. Me, right? This is the one. So, the one silver lining is that more people got to think, oh, I don't have to send my kid to a place that's going to teach them to hate me, and yet they are begging the government to take their kids back.
Again, this comes back to the democratic task of the proletariat that we're looking at. Now the political struggle has become vastly extended. The revolution is spread throughout the land. The mildest liberals have become extremists. It may therefore seem that historical references to the recent past, such as we have just made, are out of place, with no bearing on the actual turbulent present. The mildest liberals becoming extremists, we see that right now. We see people that 5 years ago would consider themselves I vote Democrat, but I'm really an independent, or I vote Republican, but I'm not huge on the GOP. Now with polarization that the last two presidents, three presidents have brought, even those moderate, wishy-washy liberals are ready to fucking die for your kids to go to public school. They would, when you talk about homeschooling, they look at you like you're an alien from outer space, like you're there to fucking rape and pillage. When you talk about maybe not wearing a mask.
Oh, yeah. And you and I, we live in a really blue state, right? And I was thinking about this, that I think that in the past, right, I was able to, I'm pretty open about my politics, but in the past, I was able to make small talk, hang out with normies that, disagreed with me on stuff, right? And now you can't. Every little interaction is kind of political, because it seems like I'm refusing to wear a mask, right? People that encounter me are going to ask, right? Or they might back off, or they might get in my face and yell about it. Even that thing, what do I put on my body?
Whereas those same people 5 years ago, you could still probably have small talk with them. You could still allude to the fact that you're a dissident, and they probably find it interesting, maybe a little off-putting.
After January 6th, I had somebody I know just begin to angrily text me, what's your take on this? What's your take on this? How's this okay? How do you justify this? And all I texted back was well, I wish that they would have done more. I think it was stupid, but I'm all up for, destroying government property over Target, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that person knew I was a libertarian the whole time, right? But it's just that...
But when you even start talking about the little bit of libertarian praxis there is...
Yeah, it's just how could you? I'm like, I don't know. I would much prefer they burn more police buildings and, And it was how could you support this? I'm like, you've known this since you met me. But I thought you were just...
Surprise.
Yeah, but it's but I think you're just a kooky leftist that's more open to drugs. I'm like, no, when I say no government, I mean no government, right?
Yeah.
I have a friend that's now tweeting that double masks are not that bad, and he and I used to debunk together. Right?
Yeah, there seems to be a disconnect.
Yeah, and so I think that where we live, you can't even get away from the, you know, political, like, it can't be, oh, you don't bring this up, it's a sensitive topic. It's if your face is exposed.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you're the crazy one.
That's for our geographic region. You know, if you walk outside, even though it's allowed now, being in the central nervous system of progressivism and trust in institutions that is the Boston metropolitan area.
Yeah.
Even going outside without a mask on, you still get looks, even though it's allowed.
I know. I really wish I saw, like, I was expecting to see more maskless people outside, but they're
not where we're at.
Yeah. I haven't had anybody yell at me lately though, which is a turn for the better.
Yeah. I just walk with a closed fist and like an angry looking face. You know, people generally, they'll shoot me a look. You know, that's about as far as that goes for right now.
Yeah. And I mean, if we were to go sort of, you know, collapsitarian on it, maybe there is a silver lining that at least people are admitting to themselves. Like, if you're one of the people that is still masking, you might think, oh, like those like evil, impure people, I don't want to be associated with them. And people that are refusing to mask are thinking, oh, those are, you know, crazy people, I don't want to associate with them either. And maybe that's a silver lining, that they're getting bad enough that people are really not thinking, oh, we can still get along if we just brush this under the rug, like the couple that's going to break up but is avoiding it.
Yeah, the very preliminary silver lining about people that are still insisting on wearing masks is that they do have an inherent trust or inherent distrust of expertise, because right now the expertise is saying something that directly conflicts with their interest. Their interest being, I'm antisocial, or I'm poorly socialized. Yeah. I have poor self-esteem. So I'm going to keep wearing this mask and, you know, fuck what Fauci says. Even if Fauci says masks are bad, like that'll probably be the only way in which they would abandon it if suddenly masks became bad.
And it would be such a mind fuck too, right? Because I honestly think that a lot of people are really angry about people that are not, you know, shutting themselves in. It's because people have had to give up a lot, or not have, people have made themselves give up a lot. And it's sunk costs. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's usually they've given up things that they never wanted to begin with. There's a whole population, especially around here, of people that are on all kinds of mood stabilizers, SSRIs, and it's not like one or two people. Mm-hmm. I think a community can absorb that, you know, without major cultural impact. But the amount of like untreated or just celebrated like mental illness, personality disorders is like seeping into power structures, and it's starting to reflect that.
And right. And I also feel bad, right, that like a lot of the people that are fully buying into this, they're not doing it because they're happy. They're doing it to cope, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they have some type of depression or anxiety that has probably gone untreated. They probably acquired it throughout our world-renowned education system in Massachusetts. You know, it's getting back to Lenin. That's just part and parcel of this disconnect between the promise of capitalism and the results. And I'm talking about capitalism in a Marxist sense.
Yeah.
So I guess cronyism.
Yeah, or, you know, capitalism, or not real capitalism, but yeah.
The contradiction of you can be and do whatever you want versus getting out into the real world and realizing you're going to work a shit job in order to pay for your shit apartment.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, again, I feel terrible saying this. I'm also not prepared for our society to, you know, collapse at all. I say this with a work from home job in Boston as I'm sitting at my computer, right, and talking about collapse, right? So you're welcome to make fun of me all you want.
No.
But like, you would almost wish that things would get a little bit worse, or that people would feel a little bit more hopeless, so that like clinging on to whatever Fauci says wouldn't be enough. So that like, if people feel that their lives are meaningless enough, that they cannot supplement that lack of meaning with, you know, just adhering to policies and thinking they're virtuous and putting their mask on and their second mask on, like, if people are empty enough, if things are bad enough, if things are hopeless enough, I wonder who would snap. And it's almost like you really don't want to be the frog in the boiling water. You would hope the water gets too hot too quickly at some point, right?
And this is kind of the great promise of reactionary, is you have nothing to lose. You are, you know, you are one tweet away from losing everything that you have, your kids, your job, mm-hmm. your family. You really have nothing to lose. So the promise of reaction is, fuck it, let's burn it all down and start over. The appeal to that is, in doing so, you're hurting your enemies. You're hurting these progressives that are themselves hurting. But the difference is, you're using your pain, your personal pain, and funneling it into the political system in order to start fresh. They're using their pain, funneling it into political system in order to try to achieve some sense of belonging that they'll never have.
And I wanted to add that I don't think, political participation is hopeless in terms of spreading the message of liberty. And I hate mm-hmm. using that phrase.
Yeah.
And
cringe.
Well, you guys that hear the audio, you can't see me moving my hands around.
Trying to wash your hands of the stench.
Yeah, but I really wish that honestly, I feel like do whatever you are best at, right? But I just really wish that if you go the, political route, that you're just unabashedly burn the system down.
Yes. Yeah. The goal should not be to have earnest participation in democracy. The goal shouldn't be, well, we need to get a majority vote in order to get this bill passed. The goal is to worm your way into the political system and change the rules, change the structure, change the laws in a not so democratic fashion, in a more Machiavellian, backhanded fashion, just like Lenin did when he was in the minority, in order to consolidate power, to pave the way for the collapse, for the balkanization, for whatever.
Yeah, and I think it's important, right? Like, if you actually are talking about politics to make, political change, I think it's really insightful to make the, distinction between run as a Republican and change some minor weed law versus run as whoever, and kind of set up the groundwork to have it crash and burn. Although I'm not sure how you would set up the groundwork to make it crash and burn, but I guess somebody smarter than me would know better.
We could change all the laws we want. The next election cycle, if you haven't consolidated enough power, they're just going to get changed right back. And for that, you need to be underhanded rogues. Make sure structurally that you maintain power until you don't need it anymore, until the state withers away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So you had talked about the LP Philadelphia.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Pennsylvania,
yeah.
Right? And that could be a good example of
oh, it's perfect.
Of you can appeal to how unfair it is.
Oh, absolutely. It's
but that's what we've been doing as a bigger community. We've been just saying, "Oh, this violates the NAP. This is unfair," or "This is bad." And
going on Twitter and saying, "Look what they did. They beat us. They didn't play by the rules." You sound like conservatives when Trump was in charge. They're getting around all the official actions we've taken, all the good and proper and right things that we've done by the law, by the book. They got around it. Isn't that bad? Nobody cares. Fucking at the end of the
that's
day,
that's the system. Yeah.
We should be taking notes.
Yeah, I guess don't try to play clean. And if you don't want to participate, have fun.
Yeah.
I that's how we could summarize it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now I just feel sad.
I mean, it sucks that it was done to us. But
yeah.
I mean, another part and parcel of Marxism is, an objective evaluation of your strategy. Constantly running a self-critical analysis of what you're doing. Is it working? And what do you need to do in order to make it work? And now the LPMC of Pennsylvania knows this is what we need to do for the future. It's a hard lesson to learn, but it's only 180 days until they're allowed to exercise the full capacity of their numbers and start implementing measures to consolidate power. And again, I say all this, and I hope that's what they're doing. I hope that they're not going into it to get 5% of the vote. I hope that they don't honestly believe that they can spread the message of liberty and actually affect things in our lifetimes, at least. I hope their goal is more than that, but we'll see.
And, it's easy for us to sit here and talk shit about them, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I try to refrain from talking shit about them. It's just I hope this is what you're doing. If you're not, then good luck. And if so, then I'm going to be more and more interested. I'm going to get closer and closer to fucking strapping that rubber dildo on and taking it. you're wooing me into the bedroom, but you know.
Yeah.
But you know, if that's not what you're doing, then I'm gonna slam the door right on your dick.
Yeah, that's really well said.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, I really do hope to see more of like fuck the system messaging and less about the nap.
Oh, please. I pretty much know like Austrian economics. I have no interest in diving into it anymore. I get it. Human action, yes. That's we're past that. We're way past trying to convince people of the righteousness of our cause by talking about theory. Like now we're at the point where there's no conversation to be had. We know who's in our tribe, we know who isn't, and go from there.
Yeah. No, I think that's really well said too. And like I think there is just like this instinct to get people to do things for the right reasons, quote unquote. Right? Like there are people that I know that are very liberty oriented, that don't believe in anarchy, that don't give a shit about all of this stuff, right? But they're going to move to New Hampshire, they're gonna get land, they're gonna get a gun, they're gonna get a dog,
yeah.
Right? Like or like I have a different friend that's also doesn't believe that anarchy could work and doesn't care that much about Austrian economics, but intent on getting me to learn to shoot, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, I know communists, mm-hmm. I know ethno-nationalists, I know all the different corners of the political compass, and people who unapologetically despise the overall message of libertarianism.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that doesn't matter. Like I said, it's not so much about what we're for; it's
yeah,
what we're against.
Against.
And we're all against the same neoliberal centrism.
Yeah. And
we don't have the luxury of numbers like neoliberal centrism does.
Yeah.
We don't really get to choose. Well, we can be selective about who, you know, who our allies or who our acquaintances are.
Yeah.
But all you're doing is just prolonging the march to progress.
And we don't have to unite with them. We can just make them angry, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take a pissed off Marxist Leninist, or I'll take a pissed off race realist any day over bougie neoliberal that we should make weed legal so that they can tax it. Like,
Or like even the people that say, oh, if we just do this, it's going to be more efficient because free markets are efficient. And like, right. And like at this point, I would much rather just like, hang out with somebody that's like interested in like getting me to learn to shoot, rather than somebody that talks about the efficiency of free markets, right?
Yeah. Praxis versus theory.
Yeah.
We're done with theory. It's time to move on to praxis. And one of the arenas of praxis is hopefully what the LPMC is doing.
Yeah.
And it's always been what agorists are doing. Like they are praxis. They've been fairly successful, but you know, I think they just need, parallel to them, they need something on the political side to kind of make their lives easy. At least to give them some entertainment.
Yeah. So I had wanted to ask you, do you think like the branding or like spreading the message of liberty has any merit, or like using the LPMC as a platform to like inform people, oh, this is what the LP really is. We're not just Gary Johnson. And do you think that the goal of the only goal of the LPMC is to gain political power? Or do you think that the whole like messaging aspect could still be worthwhile?
I think the messaging aspect has to be done in a very specific way. I think it varies probably on the individuals you're talking to, the groups you're talking to. You know, for your approach to conservatives might be to appeal to their idea of liberty, to show them that, you know, these institutions that conservatives normally place a high degree of trust in are fundamentally disconnected from the idea of liberty.
Like NRA.
But like the NRA, like the police, like the public education system, you know, and then from there gauge their viability, their usefulness to your movement. If they're not willing to move further to the right, like if they're not willing to venture further into libertarianism slash anarchism, then they're useless. See you later. And God forbid that they push back in any meaningful way, then they become an enemy. That's no different than you know, the progressives. Your approach to, say, a more deep into radicalism, ethno-nationalist, you know, I don't think usually when you're that far down the political spectrum, in a corner of a political spectrum, you've probably already, like, developed your ideology enough to know what you're not and what doesn't appeal to you. So for that, it wouldn't be so much spreading the message of liberty. It would be spreading the message against your common enemies.
Yeah, and that sounds really cool.
Find some common ground there.
Yeah, and that's a lot less cringe, by the way. Like, if we could call it fuck the system as opposed to spread the message of liberty, I would be much more on board with it.
Yeah, and the first sentence I tweeted earlier, the preamble to the Libertarian Party.
Yeah.
Like, you saw their language and what they did, and it's nice and it's good. And it's, you know, kind of edgy. And then the first sentence of this, the Russian Social Democratic Party, as the conscious exponent of the working class movement, aims at the complete liberation of the toiling masses from every form of oppression and exploitation. That is the first sentence. Like, that, that's the Russian Social Democratic Party's preamble.
Yeah.
And it just hits you a lot harder than, like, I don't have it up right now, but it hits you a lot harder than the Libertarian Party's.
Yeah.
The Libertarian Party's...
free to live by their values and not affected by... Oh, yeah, okay, right?
You know, they're spreading the message of liberty.
Yeah.
And this is spreading the message against oppression and exploitation.
Yeah.
They're not the same thing. The tone is completely different. The message is completely different. Yeah, positive versus negative. People like the negative right now. Yeah. The negative tone.
Yeah. And I mean, and there is good timing for the negative tone too.
Absolutely. Within all areas of the political compass, it's a very good time to get people to fight each other.
Yeah. there was one last thing I wanted to add. So they had, so like, I keep saying they, it's he, but he had, that if you have like a single call for, you know, democracy, it isn't isolated or it cannot be isolated from other calls, which is from an overthrow of the government, which is for a replacement of the system and, you know, the sovereignty by concentrating power.
So I would apply that to, again, the LPMC and the Greater Libertarian Party at large. Their goal is to take over the system and then concentrate their power within it. The system being the Libertarian Party. In order for the takeover to succeed, they have to make sure that they're not in turn taken over 10, 20 years down the line.
Yeah.
And then, and I've said this before, this is kind of like the LPMC is kind of playing in a sandbox right now. They're going to learn what works and what doesn't. They're going to learn on the local, state, and national level, all these different approaches you can take. And which ones are more effective, which ones got them set on their heels. And from those lessons learned after the takeover, the next 5 years after that, they can start with another institution. Let's say the NRA, or let's say, you know, the like a local public school system. And if they, I think the dirtier they play, the more effective they're going to
be. Yes, yes, that's exactly on point. And I really hope they don't try to play the same, like, respectability politics that the rest of the LP does.
Absolutely not. I mean, that would halt all of this zeal that people have, all this excitement, all this, you know, I don't want to say revolutionary, but like all this all this hope that people have. That would put that right to an end. You know, the reason why Rothbard is so appealing to right wingers is because of his tone. The reason why Lenin is so appealing to not most leftists, but a certain sect of leftists is because of his tone. You know, if you get rid of that tone, what do you have?
Yeah.
The message, the goals have to fundamentally be different.
Yeah, and I think that's also what makes people like Doe Bishop really exciting is because, like, he doesn't try to defend that, oh, the Republican Party is not pure, but it's good. He's like, no, fuck you. I want to live in Florida and live in a free place. This is awesome. I get power. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Right? Like,
yeah, Ron DeSantis is the same thing. Like, just his approach, his tone, it's hostile. And it's very clear hostility towards that progressive power dynamic that is constantly threatening people that ideally would rather be left out of it. But you know, now he's giving them something to point to and say, okay, I want to follow that guy because he's fighting against it. And he's not perfect. Policy-wise, Ron DeSantis is whatever.
Yeah. But you hear about Florida when you live in Massachusetts, and
it's
you're like,
unquestionably right? a better situation.
Yeah, yeah. So, and like, I don't claim to know what's better, what the bishop says we should do, or what the LPMC says we should do. And I honestly think, like, do what you're good at, like, do what feels right to you. You cannot convince somebody to do something else. That, but I just wish that whatever you're doing, I hope that it's hostile.
Yeah, it has to be hostile in order to be effective right now in 2021. That seems to be the pattern on both sides, for progressives and on the right. The more hostile you are, the more effective you are. And my piddly ass fucking 1,000 follower Twitter account, as hostile as I am, you know, I still manage to gain occasionally, like if I have a really, like the more hostile the tweet, and I'm sure you experience this too, the more hostile your tone is in your social media, the more followers you gain. It's great.
Yeah, no, and I feel bad that I've like been beefing with people.
It's fun as hell.
On Twitter. At times it's fun, it's encouraging.
I'm like on the precipice of beefing with many blue-pilled libertarians, like high-profile ones. I'm like just waiting for the right moment to strike, and it just so happens to be like right before Porkfest. The joke is that I'm going to show up there and just get beat up by a mob.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I am actually going to go to Porkfest too, so it's going to be exciting. It's going to be my you know, first time going.
I'll be there 23rd through the 26th for all the listeners and for you.
Yeah, I will be there the 24th through the 27th. So that's the Thursday, the last 4 days. Yeah. Alrighty. Well, I hope to meet you in person at Porkfest.
Absolutely. And thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me on. I'm sorry for, you know, talking in a circle. Yeah.
You've set the standard for all my future women guests.
I'm sorry.
All
yes,
zero.
Yes, this is why you don't have women on. They will just ramble and ramble and ramble. Apologize and be like, I didn't talk too much. That I
no.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, only I'm allowed to do that.
Yeah. Alrighty, Aaron. It was really nice to meet you. Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, nice to meet you
yes,
too. Thanks for coming
thank
on.
You.
Welcome to Boys Town.
Hey, Tom Lawn Earthers. Do you ever get bored listening to the same old podcast over and over again? Yeah, me too. The crack and heroin you get from your dealer under the rat-infested bridge? It's okay. But sometimes, you want to get a little rebellious. Well, we have just the thing for you. Slurp Gang, a new podcast, hosted by Cotton, a nihilistic Jew. And yours truly. We bring you the very best schizoautism. Not any of that synthetic crap from the Pfizer vaccine. You can find us on all podcatchers everywhere. And if you don't, we have your name and address.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Boys Town with Aaron. I am your host, Aaron. This is a Timeline Earth production. Anything that's said directly reflects the views and opinions of all of the Timeline Earth hosts. And having said that, I want to welcome Steppy.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what we're going to do today is we're going to take a stroll through the timeline, the dark alleys, the seedy bars, maybe even some high rise, some men's room fucking bathroom stalls and high rises.
Nothing new for you.
Nope, absolutely not. Speaking of being prodded, if you'll notice, UFOs is trending. What I think this is they had a 60 Minutes episode with some former Navy intel guy. I haven't heard anything crazy come out from it, but he basically just says, you know, we have no idea what these are, and we see them all the time. And because they look a certain way, we just say, we don't really want to look into that. You know, there's a very real possibility that they could be like intel gathering things from like Russia, China, whatever. But if they're saucer shaped and spinning and they move around weird, then we're like, oh, whoa, we're not going to get into that.
So you're telling me that naval intelligence is propagating the UFO narrative?
Yeah, I know. That's weird, right?
Uncharted territory. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's we got a real good dose of that when they released that that footage from 2015 with the fighter pilots, like basically locking on to something that they were like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to come up with like a fresh commentary on this stuff because it's either, you know, one or both of like a Project Bluebeam angle. Like they need to keep seeding this as this potential grand narrative that requires global governance, or it's just a means of sowing distrust in international politics. And like, I mean, I'm sure there's other angles, but those are pretty much the big ones that come up in conspiracy circles, I think. And I mean, I think, you know, that's kind of, this is just par for the course. It's just more seeds of the same stuff.
The Project Bluebeam angle, I like it, and I also don't like it. It seems like they haven't been sprinkling the seeds as routinely as I thought they would. Just in my small period of being alive, I saw like all the TV shows, Unsolved Mysteries, X-Files, like I saw them putting it into the public's conscience. And then maybe it's just my autism, but like, it seems like there's been a lull and up until recently when they released that footage.
Yeah, I think these things are very, you know, touch and go, right? Like people who are like very astute about or very autistic about, you know, sticking to certain patterns and charting them over time, like they kind of spike and they pull back. If you look at like the bugs and the anti-meat stuff, like that's gone through waves. Sometimes you'll go through like a few months, you'll never hear about it at all. And then you'll just get like hammered with a few stories about bugs that like are all over Twitter. Yeah.
They're really good for you.
Right. So I think, you know, like, there's got to be so many psyops that are running simultaneously, and I think this is just one of them. And you never know if anything's going to come of it. Like they're keeping an iron in the fire, I think.
Yeah, I would have thought that would be one of the first things Trump did, where he was so close with Alex Jones, is just declassify as much of that shit as he could, and like yet another disappointment by Trump.
Yeah, well, that's a big argument that he's like not a true man of the people, or just a total dummy, like one or the other. But you know, like, I mean, it's just exhausting to say at this point because we've been saying this kind of stuff for like 4+ years. But there were so many easy wins that he could have done just by the stroke of a pen, just like Snowden and Ross and like declassifying documents, and none of these happened. So it's like, all right, it was all theater, or he was a big doofus.
Yeah, Podesta was probably our best chance.
Yeah.
What else we got? We got, Bill Gates. Let's talk about our friend and role model, Bill Gates. Speaking of men of the people, Bill Gates is going through a nasty divorce with his very handsome wife. And it seems like he's definitely losing the fucking PR battle, like, by a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, it makes you wonder. It's like, is Melinda the better spokesperson? Like, if I were George Soros, or, you know, some equivalent George Soros figure, like, I'd probably be happier with Melinda, because she's just as controllable as Bill. You can put her in front of a camera, and then you got that, like, girl boss energy.
Yep, that high T versus low T fucking battle. And, may the bigger penis win. And so far it's been Melinda.
Right. Bill just asks the Indian people to take the sterilizing vaccine. Melinda just does not give them a choice.
Dumps it right in Calcutta. While you're taking a shit on the sidewalk, make sure you step on one of these.
Oh, did you see that? I don't know if it was a hoax or not, but there was like a screenshot about like an Indian COVID variant that was causing people to like diarrhea in the streets.
I didn't see that, but I mean, I guess if there is a such thing as an Indian COVID variant, then it would definitely do that. The virus has become cultural. Oh wait, always has been. Yeah, man, just fucking between the media kind of like, oh, Bill Gates, former friend of Jeffrey Epstein, is accused of having sex with an intern. Like, they're giving him the treatment, and it's amazing to see.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy because, like, you couldn't play the Epstein op better if you were the powers that be. No one's that critical about it, but, like, you know, people like us, we've, like, known about just 100 different photo ops about different people who have, you know, been on the Lolita Express and been photographed with Epstein. It's like all these people could be taken down at any minute, but they're only corrupt or bad like the moment that, you know, the handful of publications that matter actually pull the switch. Like, it's crazy how well this works on people. It's like,
yeah,
like they can just be like, oh, well, Bill Gates is Epstein connected now, so you should all be worried about him. But, like, you know, if they never push the Steven Pinker button, then Pinker's always clean. Like, it's nuts.
Yep. It's amazing to see. Yet another just mass manipulation that, like, it's just funny how stupid and effective it is.
Yeah. If you go on Reddit, like, I remember they would always talk about, like, Trump's Epstein connection, which actually, for how, like, powerful he was one of the weaker Epstein connections. I think he had, like, a handful of flights, but, like, that was kind of it. But if you look at, like, Bill Clinton, it was something like a dozen plus. There's, like, way worse politicians.
It was one of those moments where I was like, man, please don't make me defend Trump. But, like, he did kind of drop hints about what a fucking monster that guy was. He's like, oh, yeah, my buddy Jeff, he really likes them girls young.
Right, yeah. Like, I don't want to be like a... like a plan truster, if that's still a thing anymore. But it did seem like the Trump Epstein connection was like, yeah, he wasn't all in on it. He didn't go to the back room. Or he was, and he just thought it was really funny to just smack talk him in public anyway. Like, yeah, dude's a total pedo. Like, even though I went to the back room.
Oh, here's a hashtag that's trending. Oxa calls armies. Let's see what that's all about. Oh, look. Muslims are angry. Huh. Weird. Yeah, there's been some new fires raging in the Palestine-Israel conflict. I can't decide which side I hate more.
Well, there was that one dub that was taken. What was it? The Al Jazeera and Associated Press building in Gaza was demolished by a missile.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. And, like, it's another thing. Like, please, I really don't want to like Israel. I really don't want to like the IDF or Mossad. But all right.
Yeah.
We had a rally in Boston. And it was like a pro Palestine, like, Palestine liberation rally. And, like, it's just a bunch of, like, people in burqas waving Palestine flags. And I'm like, wow, I really don't like that. And then I go on the news and I see, like, the fucking all these idiots being like, we need to support Israel. They're our best ally in the Middle East. This the same shit they always say. And I really don't like that either. And I kind of just hope they glass each other.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's a real two retards fighting situation.
Yeah, but, like, even saying that among our community corner of the Twitter sphere, like, they probably lean more pro-Palestine, only because they lean heavily anti-Israel.
Yeah, I mean, like, to be clear, what I want is a Catholic reconquest. Like,
yeah, oh yeah. At the end of the day, I mean, that's the goal.
Yeah. So it's really just a matter of whoever's the softer opposition for that. And for now, you know, I think Hamas is an easier fight to win. So
it's recapturing the Holy Land versus rebuilding the Third Temple. And I'm not about fucking the Prots. So
wait, you don't
know really about the Jews.
You're not trying to bring about the end times.
Yeah, I mean, that's that whole area of Protestant eschatology. It's like one of the few very obscure things that can, like, make me legitimately angry when I look at it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a topic that'll ruffle some feathers. But you know, the infuriating thing about that is, like, it's pretty expressly clear through biblical prophecy that like no man knows the hour. And yet there's a number of Christian evangelicals who think that they can, you know, immanentize the eschaton and like give birth to an unblemished calf and like do all these crazy things to, you know, bring about the third temple and then bring about, you know, the revelation deliberately, which is like, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Like that's not maybe giving the whole position a fair shake, but it seems kind of crazy to me.
There's a reason why like Revelations isn't read in like any liturgical calendar, like whether it's Catholic or Orthodox, like they just stay away from Revelations because they don't want people like dumbasses within the church even to form their own conclusions about the end times. So they just say like, yeah, it's there, but we're not going to fucking get into it because it's just so open to interpretation.
Yeah, there's actually a fairly thought out position that large portions of Revelation are historical. They're about the destruction of the second temple. And like, it sounds goofy because if you read it naively, like, you know, you see it as a book of like prophecy about the future. But there's people who've like really made the case that actually much of Revelation is what has occurred. And to take this prophetic argument is wrong.
Yeah, it's wrong. And also, as we can see, very destructive. I mean, it's our entire foreign policy as far as the Middle East goes. It's Protestant eschatology.
Yeah, and the laughable thing about it is it's two groups of people thinking they're getting the upper hand on each other, and they both know exactly what the other person is trying to do. But you've got like Zionist Jews who are like, oh, you know, we'll get the U.S. Army to like give us all this military aid and blah blah blah, and then the Christians are like doing the double reversal on them, and it's like, I don't know, it's.
If only we had a strong Catholic Church.
Yeah.
I know. LMAO. What else we got? Fucking John Oliver. This is who I want. I want to know exactly what his opinion is. People react to John Oliver's commentary regarding the ongoing Israeli-Palestinian conflict during the latest episode of his show. Let's take a wild guess as to what his position is. I'm going to go on a limb and say that it's pro-Palestine.
That's very likely. I'm also going to say that his position is that it's 2021. It's 2021 and we're still fighting.
Highly original, never been said. That's why he's a genius and we're plebs. Yeah, apparently he calls out Israeli war crimes. Wow.
Well, everyone, 1 million Redditors just got their opinion on the Israel-Palestine conflict.
Thank God for John Oliver. Well, that's all I got from my my fucking run through the timeline. The cancer of my Twitter. What do you want to talk about, Steffi?
You know, I had a half-baked thought prepared, and I actually think you're the right man to perhaps come up with an answer to this tricky question. Okay.
Let's parse it out.
I think in order to be effective, right, if you look at any portion of the political compass, any particular sub-ideology, there's always sort of an aesthetic and some promise of what can be delivered by that. And like, as an example, if you look at like modern right-wing fascists, right, the aesthetic is like, you know, beauty and like, you know, like
the Norman Rockwell
thing and like idealized, like, you know, in shape and beautiful people, sort of like joining together and being, you know, greasy and shiny, right? Or if you look at like Soviet...
Being able to put up fucking...
Yeah, exactly. Plates. If you look at like Soviet like propaganda posters, you have all these like chiseled jawlines standing in formation together and just like bountiful food. Like, so like, my question is, like, is there actually an aesthetic and a promise to the corners of, like, dissident libertarianism that we run in? Or is it, is, you know, an ideology without an aesthetic? Because I've been trying to pinpoint, like, outside looking in, if you look at almost any other ideology, neoliberalism, you've got lumpy people of different colors holding hands in poorly drawn art, or you've got like the commies and they've got Antifa, right? Like, it's like, oh, like, you know, I can see myself dyeing my hair and throwing a brick with them.
The watercolor portrait of somebody,
right? And it like turns into a butterfly, hashtag Banksy. So I and this may just be like a failure of like my ability to self-reflect, being like, you know, a right-wing libertarian. But it's like, what is the aesthetic? What do people see when they look at this? And do we, if we don't have an aesthetic, are we screwed?
You know, that's a very interesting question. I haven't really considered it before. I think we've always had aesthetics assigned to us. You know, whether you're in the libertarian sphere or the agorist sphere, our aesthetics are like bumper stickers and memes. I guess the closest thing I could think of would be like the tactical fucking boogaloo thing.
I did consider that, but that's like a sub thing. Like, not everyone who's like a right wing libertarian is a boog boy. Like there's the Hopians almost get into the fascist aesthetic. Like, if you're like a super trad Hopian, you're like, oh, look at this 1950s picture. Like, we could have that in a covenant community.
Yeah, they latch on. Yeah, they latch on to the old school fascist aesthetic. I mean, we could do like the agorist aesthetic and just like Jabba the Hutt and the watercolor, like growing beets. Just
being lifted out of your cucumber farm with a crane.
Yeah, as far as the need for an aesthetic goes, yeah, that's kind of that might be something that would blow up, because it's like a demand that we didn't even know was
like,
there.
Just because we're swimming in aesthetics, like, you can just, especially these days, you can just peg people by a few symbols or a few words that they utter. Like, you see a blue line flag and you're like, you are a Fox News Republican. You probably own at least one gun. Like, you get a read on people like that. And it's really like, what's the dog whistle for like being in, you know, this sphere? Like, what is it? Like a pine tree flag or something? Like, it seems to me there's a lack of symbols. It's really hard to just like,
you got the don't tread on me. That comes to mind.
Republican, and then you got full right quadrant aesthetic. Yeah. It's not like,
you could find that at like a Patriot prayer rally. Yeah.
Yeah, those guys are kind of based.
I mean, there was somebody waving that.
They're getting a lot of fist fights.
Yeah, there was a "Don't Tread on Me" flag at January 6th, like right in the news, and I'm surprised they didn't really hit on that. Shit, that's a very good question, and I think I agree with you completely that we do need an aesthetic. It's just, we don't have a history. You know, we've always been kind of a branch of classical liberalism, for better or worse. Mostly for worse now.
Yeah, and as a branch of classical liberalism, it's like, I don't know, being like a Mises scholar, like, that's kind of, at least among the leadership class, that's an aesthetic. But that is very classically liberal, is to, you know, be like a theoretical scholar.
Just right off the bat, I think the best we can do is just fucking steal aesthetics and make them our own.
The problem is the aesthetic has to become so disgusting that the wrong people don't want to use it. Like, it actually needs a little stink on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, in just this episode, I don't think I could come up with a fully original, persuasive, fucking eye catching design or theme to assign the dissident libertarian right. That's something that would have to be like workshopped. And I'm sure that, like, you know, we get me, you, Pete, people more so on the radical dissident side to come together and brainstorm something. We could we could probably come up with something insane.
I mean, this is also the value of having a lot of like native talent to in your movement. Like the people, the culture creators and the meme makers are the ones who accidentally end up stumbling on these things. You almost can't sit down and like workshop it. It just has to emerge. Like, you know, we need like a libertarian Kanye. Like,
well, that's certainly not going to be me, because I have like an IQ of 85 and I am not artistic whatsoever. That R, that hard R in artistic, I replace.
Yeah, well, that's the Massachusetts accent. you're wicked artistic.
Yeah.
Well, you know, hey, it was meant to be an open question. So just something to get the noggin jogging, right? Like, what's the rallying point? What do we look like to outsiders? It's a head scratcher.
Yeah, I'm like sprinting. My noggin is sprinting right now. And it's hitting a brick wall and splattering. I don't even know who I would ask about that. I don't know why you asked me. Why did you ask me that?
You know, hey... you are a thought leader.
Oh, am I? Jesus.
The inventor of diagonal unity.
Am I? I'm sure it's been done before. I'm pretty sure, you know, Hoppe might have not have came out and said it, but he is a post-Marxist. You just have to, like, really, really read in between the lines, which, as we know, Hoppians, like, actual Hoppians don't really do that.
Right.
They don't read. Sorry, I'm just like sucking down the last of my beer. And I'm about to crack open another one.
Yeet.
What would a libertarian home look like? I mean, we have the crack house. And that's actually pretty libertarian.
I think prepping is pretty... That's a libertarian aesthetic.
Yeah, it's like... it would be one of those like where all the furniture hides a gun. Like the fucking... or the head of the bed, you just have to like punch and then a shotgun drops down. And then, like, you have a hidden safe in your nightstand with, like, an AR pistol.
Yeah, eating MREs for dinner because they're about to go bad.
It sucks because this is mid-episode, but, like, I'm like, fucking dying thinking about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's rhetorically important, though. Like, it really is.
It is. It's extremely important, especially as we develop. As this movement develops... where you got the Mises Caucus starting to gain some steam and starting to actually gain political power, like not really gain political power, but like, you know, all these symbolic victories that are happening.
I think it would just be powerful to rally behind something completely apolitical and just put all the chips in on it and be like, you know, this is just the thing for radical right-wing libertarians. Like, it's like raw milk. Like, everyone just, like, we're just all about raw milk because that's symbolic of, like, free markets. Like we want to end the regulatory state, return to tradition, like, eat real food and screw the globalists. Yeah. Like, just be like, yeah, like, did you have your raw milk today, fellow libertarians?
Yeah, I mean, I made the suggestion that, you know, at the national convention, just, like, all the Mises Caucus guys wear armbands.
There you go.
But that's like me stealing from the fascists.
Well, just put something like so whimsical on the armband that like when people rage at it, like they look stupid. And I don't know what that is, but you basically take a page out of the like it's okay to be white playbook, right? Like you want to make the person who's mad look stupid.
I mean, raw milk's a good one. Just a red armband with a milk bottle on it. People would be so fucking angry.
And they wouldn't know why. They would just be angry anyway.
Yeah, because it's an armband, and that's symbolic of fascism.
Oh, and there was that whole media op about milk being racist, so...
Yeah.
Actually, I did find...
It's the general pattern of just watching them attempt to form these narratives and, like, form these, like, little social... like, mini-memes, like, these little social patterns... and try to imbue them into their audience and then watching it all fall apart. What do you think their success rate with that is?
Is there a specific day here? Is this LPMC or?
No. I mean, like, as far as like, you know, the mainstream corporate media, I'm trying to think of like specific times where they've really pushed some type of narrative or some type of anti,
like the okay sign wing or something, because that worked completely.
Yeah, yeah, it did. Yeah, you can no longer do that.
Like, what you talk to, like, you know, 80% of people who actually know what's going on. Most people don't care because it's stupid. You talk about most people who like know about it, like in private one-on-one, they'll be like, yes, this was like a 4chan op that went too far. But like, you know, there's that hardcore 20% that like to show their devotion to the media or like have just decided to accept it. And like, you know, they don't actually believe it. Like they'll always say something like, well, it did start as a joke, but it's effectively correct now. Like, they'll say something like that. It's like, it's as good as true. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Truthful, but not factual.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Man, you're still, like, my brain is still exploding. And I don't know, man.
Well,
I'm kind of shook.
This is, if you can't answer this question, then we're failing the Breitbart test. We will never have politics without culture.
Yeah.
I would say that the move perhaps is to just go all in on organic subgroups of libertarianism that actually have a valid cultural vision. That's why the Hoppians are pretty strong. Like, they actually do have a vision.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, the Boog stuff is kind of cringe, but, like, you know, that's got a vision.
That's already been co-opted by people that want to bring it back, bring everything
also,
back.
Also, it's mostly just a meme. You know, like it's like, what's the 50-year plan for a Boog boy? Like you can ask that to a Hoppian, and they'll be like, yeah, like, we want, like, a trad localized covenant community. Like, done. Like, forever. But, like, there's no 50-year plan for Booging.
Yeah, just it's the same weakness of like a somebody in the pragmatic caucus. What's the 50-year plan? Well, we're gonna slowly reform our way to back to the Constitution, and we're gonna be really inclusive of people that fucking despise us, LGBT, immigrants, Muslims, gays. Like, what is the 50-year plan
to,
for them?
Keep ceding cultural ground while never winning a single policy victory.
Like, the ideal is to go from a 3% popular vote to a 5% popular vote.
Yep. By diluting the entire platform into something completely palatable to neoliberals.
My goal is to get the Libertarian Party to a 0.5% popular vote. I want a 0.5% popular vote, but I want you to be able to hear the pops of gunfire.
Right. It's got to be the right 0.5%.
Like, people that accidentally hit, like, accidentally checked off, like, the L.
Like, I mean, this is, it's like the Joker strategy. You just need, like, the craziest 1% of the population in Gotham City, and then it belongs to you.
That 3% number keeps coming up. The goal is to be labeled terrorists. That's really where we're going to fucking cut our teeth, is when we're no longer allowed to be libertarians or
Brennan already did it without like libertarians even actively supporting terrorism. So
I know when we were like fiscally conservative and socially liberal, nope, terrorism.
Stunning.
All right, man. I think Sweet. We can wrap it up from there. Thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, just find me on Twitter, whatever.
All right, then. I will find you on Twitter. I'll find you.